broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everybody, to today's episode of Refresh Your Wealth. Excited you're here with me. I was going to say us. My co-host, Matt Sorensen, is on vacation. It's the summertime, and so a little hit and miss there sometimes with Matt and I getting together for the show, but that's all right. I've got a couple amazing guests that you're going to love, and I want to thank you for listening to another episode of Tax and Legal Topics today. They're just going to rock your world. You're going to save taxes, build wealth, protect it better, love small business, the American dream. And it's hard to find a good podcast out there that just kind of brings it all together with, I want to say, authoritative responses. I'm a CPA attorney. My partner, Matt Sorensen, is a tax attorney as well. And both of us are authors of several books. And we just want to get the truth out there. There's a lot of misinformation. So thank you for listening. If you haven't listened to our show before, welcome. And you can always go to refreshyourwealth.com, refreshyourwealth.com, and sign up for our newsletter. It's free. It's every week. Important deadlines, videos, tips. This week, I just wrote a little article on 7 reasons to start a small business. And I had a video on how to build your board of directors and a board of advisors. So there's always a little YouTube video and some good stuff. So please check it out, and you can get there at refreshyourwealth.com. So now, the topic for today, you've probably seen it in the title for the show, but the topic is going to be about teamwork, team building. And I've got an amazing guest that's going to be joining us. That's the last time I'll use the word amazing. I've got a great guest, Michael Rogers, that will be joining us talking about teamwork with his new book. And I think you're going to find it really, really insightful, whether you're managing a team at the office, managing a sports team, managing your family. We have teams in all areas of our lives, and he's going to share some insights with us that will be very, very helpful. I'll introduce him more a little later. Now, in the meantime, for those that have listened to our show before, you know what's coming. I want to give you some tax and legal tips that will hopefully help you a little bit more this week in your business life, your personal life, your investment life. And these are tips that sometimes they're right on point for you. Sometimes you can't, you know, use it at all, but maybe you can share it at your next dinner party. Walk around and you'll be the talk of the town that night, you know, just hitting some cool tax or legal tip, right? Because that's what you want to talk about as a party, is tax and legal strategies. Maybe not. Okay, anyway, so without further ado, I'm going to bring on a regular contributor to our show, Jerem Bergeson, east of the Rockies, known as Jerome, but he is Jerem Bergeson, and he's an attorney at our office. He has been on the show many times before as a contributor. He actually went to school to be in radio broadcasting, and then he got sucked into law school and lost his dream in his life, but we've rekindled that spirit. Jerem, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Mark. Appreciate the opportunity.
Well, we're glad you're here. And I think we're ready for a legal tip.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
Yeah, you know, I am west of the Rockies right now, and took a little road trip last week with my family to east of the Rockies from Cedar City here to Denver, Colorado, where I went to law school and met my wife. And along the way, you know, we logged over 1,500 miles driving the car in about a 5-6 day period.
Wow.
So with a 3-month-old and a 2-year-old, so that was an adventure in and of itself. Saw a couple car accidents, you know, in that 1,500 miles. Nothing terrible, but enough to slow us down and to rubberneck as you pass. And it got me thinking, you know, what are what are the things that I need to, you know, we need to make sure we do and don't do, you know, if you're in a car accident, from a legal standpoint, to preserve claims, to make sure that you're not getting yourself into more trouble after the car accident. Obviously, the first steps are, you know, remain calm, move the accident from traffic if you can, if it's minor. But from a legal standpoint, the first thing you need to make sure you absolutely do is call the police. If there's any damage to a car, any property damage, any injury to anyone, call the police, have them come out, get a report filed. That's going to be important evidence for a claim in a lawsuit. Absolutely have to make sure you get the police involved.
Now, Jeremy, great tips right off the bat. Of course, you're not an EMT. I don't think so, right? You're not a trained paramedic.
Not that I know.
Okay, all right. So we're not going to go down the path of what your emergency response should be regarding an accident. But the legal response, and I like your first tip, staying calm, call the police, get it documented. Get off to the side of the road. Those people that are in the middle of the road calling, it's like, seriously, the police know. You can describe what happened. Unless you can't move the car off the side of the road, at least be courteous enough to get off the road and not cause another accident. But, Jeremy, I wanted to ask you about what I've heard a lot of, and that's taking video, turning on a voice recorder. Is that stuff helpful? Is it admissible? Would it help in a claim? What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, it's absolutely helpful. Notes, photos, videos of your injuries, of the damage to the car. You can't take too many pictures. Some of them may not be able to be used, but a lot of them are going to be helpful. You want to document right away what the damage was so that there's not any question as to, well, did that damage occur later? Did that injury occur later? You know, those things, those pictures are going to be timestamped. Videos are going to be timestamped. A voice recording is going to be timestamped so that you know it was right at the time of the accident. That's absolutely huge.
Well, and I think it's funny for those of you that grew up in the 70s or 80s, we have some of you listening to the show. That's me, child of the 80s. And, you know, back then, it was just kind of the wild, wild west. You didn't have a camera or video camera handy. Now, everything seems to be on video. And whether it's Venus Williams getting in that terrible accident earlier this month,
right.
I saw some webcam footage on the news, TMZ. I listened to the news. And so they've tracked down some actual video cam of the accident now. But I think it puts people, here's my point. I think it puts people a little more guarded and cautious about what they're going to claim or say when there's a phone in their face videoing. And I think if you have multiple family members, give them a phone, say, turn on the video and start videoing, even if it's discreet. So you could kind of catch someone lying or cheating or something too.
Right. And you can take really statements from witnesses. Hey, will you mind? Can I video you telling me what you saw? You know, the scene, where are the stoplights? Where are the stop signs in relation to where the accident happened? You can document all of that. You're right. So much easier than you could even, you know, 10 years ago before the ad, well, 11 years ago before the advent of the iPhone. It's just a lot easier to do that sort of thing.
Yeah.
At this
point. Well, and I'll wrap it up with a quote from Jerry Maguire: "Help me, help you. Help me, help you." And I love when he's yelling at Cuba Gooding Jr. to give him, give me evidence. Help me, help you. Give me some content. Give me some perspective. And so, you'd be shocked how many times we have phone calls with clients that have a dispute, accident, a problem, and we're like, okay, what do you got? What do you got as, you know, support and evidence for your side of the story?
Right.
He said, she said.
Yeah, right.
Nothing. So.
Yeah. Real quickly, the one thing I would not do, don't get out and apologize and tell them it was your fault.
Mm.
That's one thing not to do. Don't admit fault, even if you think it was your fault. Don't say anything. Give facts to the police. Be honest with the police. But let the police and insurance companies decide who was at fault. Don't make an admission that the whole thing was your fault.
Yeah. To quote Matt Sorensen from, I think, a couple weeks show ago, he saw a billboard from a lawyer in Vegas. Of course, the lawyers in Vegas have the best billboards.
Yeah.
He said, just because you did it doesn't mean you're guilty. So,
right.
It's that classic. Just because you did it doesn't mean you're guilty. And since I've been watching People versus OJ, you know, it's apropos. And yeah, I finally got through the last episode of that TV series, People versus OJ. It's on Netflix. Watch it, folks, if you haven't. I was really surprised in the last episode. OJ's not guilty. It was a lot of suspense. I really didn't know. Yeah, so I just hope they find the real killer. That's what I'm looking for now. So
he won't rest till he finds the real killer.
Yeah, he won't rest. That's right. So anyway, well, Jerem Bergeson, thank you for being on the show, and we truly appreciate you. That's Jerem Bergeson running the Utah office of KKOS Lawyers. Always a big help to have him on the show. Jerem, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. All right. Well, we're going to jump over to a tax tip, and yes, it's going to be from me. I'm sorry. That's right. I wish I could hand that off to someone else, but no, you want to hear a tax tip from me. Mark Kohler, man. I'm going to throw down for you.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
All right. Now, what I want to talk about as a tax tip today is the art of owning your own personal residence with the help of a family member. I've had several calls like this over the last few weeks, and just one this morning, and it prompted me to say, you know what, I ought to talk about this on the radio show. And so here's what happens. You've got a young couple, they're trying to buy their first home, or maybe their credit's a little challenged, or they're trying to sell their current home and get into a new home. And they need a little help with down payment or just need someone to co-sign. And so they go to, you got it, mom and dad. And they say, hey, mom, hey, dad, will one or both of you sign on the purchase of this home? And they say, sure, we'll help you out. And maybe they, again, are helping with down payment. Maybe they are not. But let's just assume at least they're going to co-sign on the loan. Now, when you guys have done this, you know what's going to happen. They're going to go into the bank to buy the house. And our son and daughter buying the house? No. What happens is the bank, because of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, they're going to ask mom and dad to be on title. It's going to be really mom and dad buying the house. And that way the bank can check all their stupid little boxes and they can sell the mortgage to the bond market. And they can't package it up and sell it in a Fannie Mae bundle if they don't have mom and dad as the buyers and owners, right? So you go through these hoops and you close on the house. And then on day two, you say, well, hold it. I want to deduct the mortgage interest. Child and their spouse are living in the house. They're going to do all the repairs and maintenance and pay the property taxes and the mortgage. Mom and dad just co-signed. And then, boy, if this thing increases in value, which it probably will, if it's a home that you're going to own 3 to 5 years and you're putting a little sweat equity, this home could easily appreciate to $50,000 to $100,000, let's say, we hope. And then you go to sell it, and it's in mom and dad's name. Now you've got a tax problem because mom and dad are going to have to pay taxes. And you're saying, well, that's my primary residence. I don't pay taxes when I own it. Well, you don't own it. Mom and dad own it. Ugh, right? So I have phone calls like this all the time. And one of our key strategies here is to be able to have the children claim the home on their tax return for the mortgage interest deduction. And then when they sell it, take the sale of home exemption. And we need to be able to show the IRS that they own the home and live in the home. Those are the two rules. It has to be your home, and you have to live in it and have it on title in your name, or in some fashion, show that you have actual ownership, and have it be so for at least 2 out of 5 years. So once you hit that two-year mark, you get that sale of home exemption. So the problem here is, right, the title is in mom and dad's name. And this is where banks can get a little problemsome, because they don't want mom and dad to transfer title to the kids. They want mom and dad to be the guarantors on this loan they've sold on the bond market. So this is where a little clandestine smoke and mirrors Magnum PI has got to be done to hide the transfer from the bank, which is not illegal. It is a breach of the contract, and if the bank finds out, they can call the mortgage due and accelerate the loan. But 98.9% of the time, they're not going to do that. The mortgage is getting paid, and they don't have time to chase someone down when someone's actually paying the mortgage. So this is where we would typically put the home into a trust created by mom and dad. This is where the land trust strategy comes in, a topic in my books that I've written on many a time. And then We transfer the beneficial interest of the land trust on day three or four and transfer the beneficiary of the trust to the children. So on title, there's a trust. The bank sees mom and dad transfer the property into a trust of which they're trustees, and they're happy. The end. That's the last they see of it. That's all that's shown on public record. But then behind the scenes, we change the trustees to the kids, and we transfer the beneficial interest or beneficiary to the kids. The IRS is happy, they get the tax write-offs, and it's now their home. Now, I need to give my cautionary note here. I'm not advising anyone to breach a contract with their bank. I don't want you to get in trouble with your bank. And if the bank does find out about it, you're going to get a nasty letter that says, we want to accelerate the loan, come pay it. And you might have to put the property back the way it was originally titled, or go refi or find a different loan. So that's the ramifications there, and I want to give that as a disclaimer. But this is very commonly done, and it's a win-win for everybody, and if as long as the bank's getting paid, generally, again, 98.9% of the time, it's a win for the bank. They don't care. They're getting paid. So this is a tax strategy that we use quite a bit. Now, I want to give one little side note that this week, literally this week, I saw the first letter in the history of my career. I'm not lying. And this client may be listening to the show. He's like, Mark, hold it. Don't forget me. So I'm not going to say his name on the show, but he got a letter from Wells Fargo just, it's been a couple weeks now because he sent me the second notice, but Wells Fargo sent him a nasty letter and said, hey, you transferred the title of all these rental properties into your LLC. We don't like it. We're going to accelerate the loan. And now we're on second notice to accelerate. And this client sent it over to me. And I'm like, whoa, man, I'm not kidding. I have not seen one of those in the history of my career. Now, I've had a couple of local banks call up and get a little testy because they saw the title change. And we signed some additional paperwork and the local bank's happy. But I have never, ever seen Wells Fargo or a major bank want to accelerate a loan. And I'm not kidding. We've done thousands of these. It's almost 99.9% of the time, never a problem. In fact, I've sat down with bank lawyers who say, Mark, this isn't even on our radar. We don't even care about this. As long as the mortgage is getting paid, we don't care. So I don't know what happened at this Wells Fargo branch or how this client's name came up on their radar, but it happened. So we're working through that. But it's still, I wanted to just point out, so rare. So anyway, for any of you out there that are buying a home, wanting to work with mom and dad to get into that home, I use the land trust strategy. We charge $300 or $400. Then we got to transfer the title, maybe another 120, 150 with title transfer fees. But it's doable. And as long as you know that there's a risk the bank might get a little testy, that's fine. You know, let's do what's best for the family. I'm not wanting to rip off the IRS. It is your primary residence. You are paying the mortgage. You should be able to take that primary residence exemption. We just need to make sure that you're on title. And this helps avoid probate too. I'm going to have your personal family trust be the beneficiary of mom and dad's land trust. So that way we avoid probate in any case if mom and dad dies or if the kids die. In any sort of accident, there's no court involvement. That's just a little side benefit to this strategy too. So if as you're out there shopping around, don't pay thousands of dollars to get some lawyer or accountant, draft up a bunch of docs to do this. It's very straightforward and simple. We have a little land trust package. Like I said, get a little time with an attorney, $300-$400 and you're done. If you need more hand-holding, it's going to cost more, but it's very doable. So there's your tax tip for the week. I hope that rocked your world. Now, I get to transition without a co-host here. It's all me, and boy, for years I did the Mark Kohler show, so I'm used to this a little bit. This is so fun for me. I love being on the show with you guys every week. This is really one of the highlights of my week, and I'm grateful that many of you are listening. And I want to jump over now and to my notes and introduce our special guest. All right, so now it's my pleasure to introduce my special guest, who I mentioned earlier in the show, Michael Rogers. He is the author of the newest book out on teamwork. It's titled You Are the Team, 6 Simple Ways Teammates Can Go From Good to Great. And his resume just goes on and on. I am so honored to have him here with us. He's an Inc. Top 100 leadership speaker. He's the president of the Teamwork Leadership Company. I'll give out his website here in a moment. He teaches workshops and consults to groups on building better teams and leaders. As a speaker, trainer, and consultant, he's worked with hundreds of senior and mid-level leaders in building more effective teams all over the country. We, in fact, at our accounting firm, have brought Mike to our office for a training. with our team. And it was such an honor. And he worked with us as a consultant for several months thereafter. And he made a big impact in our lives personally, as well as at our business and with our team. And that was months ago. That was years ago that he and I just kept in just cursory contact with Michael over the last few years. And then when I saw this new book coming out, I was like, oh, my gosh, I got to reach out to him. And he reached out to me, as any good marketer would, and said, Mark, you got to highlight my book to your folks. And I thought, you know, this is a great chance to have him come out on the show. But I just want to say as well, he's got six sons, two daughters, seven grandchildren. I mean, this guy's got a beautiful family and lives in Cedar City, Utah. Been married for 30-plus years. What a good example of just sticking it out. All of us that have been married know how much work it is to raise a family and a team. A family's a team. That's what I said earlier in the show, Mike. Mike, welcome to the show. I should say that right now, so you're out here.
Thanks, Mark. Really happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Well, and I said this earlier. I go, we all have teams, whether it's a work or a sports team or a soccer team or a family is a team, right? Wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Was I being crazy? Is that crazy talk?
Absolutely. In fact, a lot of my experience, I've applied a lot of the things that I talk about in my books and my workshops with my family. And I've always looked at my family as a team. I mean, if you look at the definition of a team, which is people working together for a common goal or common reason, family fits right into that. So I actually have applied some of these things with my own family. It's been a great laboratory for me.
Yeah. Aren't we all as parents? Our kids are just lab experiments. You know, sometimes they turn out, sometimes they don't.
Right.
Now, I do want to mention this to everybody because it has been a huge resource for us. And I think, Mike, you know this. We've gone to your website many times behind the scenes, and you didn't realize that. But we have gone to Mike's website, and he's got incredible leadership videos, leadership stories, teamwork videos. It is like just a copious amount of information for any of you that are looking for a good video for a staff meeting or a little training of your own. Please get to his website. It's www.teamworkandleadership.com. Just a great URL. So simple. Teamwork and leadership.com. And so I recommend all of you get over there. And if you feel so inclined, Mike's for hire, and he's very affordable. He's not cheap, but he's not terribly expensive. And he teaches on the web, as well as his new book is fantastic. So I recommend him to all of you out there that are working on a team to talk to him in some degree or fashion. And I know he could help you out. So, well, Mike, without any further ado, please tell us why you wrote this book, You Are the Team, Six Simple Ways Teammates Can Go From Good to Great. Were you just coaching soccer for your 8-year-old and thought, I better write a book on teamwork?
No, not that. It wasn't that simple, but there were a couple things actually that happened in my life that led me to writing this book. You know, first of all, I'll say this. There's a lot of books written out there for leaders and how leaders can lead effective teams, but not a lot out there on how a teammate can be an effective teammate to help the team. And what is out there, there's really nothing. And I'm not saying this in a braggy way. I'm being serious because I've read everything out there in terms of teams. There's nothing out there around teammates that go into the depth that I do around being an effective teammate. And so when I looked at that, I thought, wow, that's kind of a niche that I could really do something with. And a couple of things happened right after I started thinking that way. I was doing some consulting, and as I was doing some interviews, I realized that everyone was putting it on the leader, you know, the lack of teamwork. So I was working at that time with a lot of dysfunctional teams, which every team has some dysfunction. And they were putting it on the leader. I thought, this isn't just the leader's fault. I looked at these members of this team, and I said, you guys aren't committed. And until you step up and become committed, it doesn't matter how good or how poor the leader is, teamwork's not going to, it's not going to happen on this team.
Oh.
And so, yeah.
I love this. This is, I need everybody at my office to hear this. This is great. So it's not all my fault. It's not my fault.
Right. members of the teams have accountability too. And we don't often think about it that way. It's really easy to look at the leader and just point the finger there. A second thing happened as I was at lunch. I talk about this in the book, in fact, with a friend of mine who's an emergency room doctor. And I asked him, what does teamwork look like in the emergency room? What does effective teamwork look like in the emergency room? And he said, you know, it's about us looking after each other's needs. It's about us knowing what each other needs before they need it, even. And he says, if we do that, we're super effective. And I thought, wow, that's like, that's service teamwork. It's servant teamwork is what it is. I've heard it's servant leadership, but this is like a new term I thought I was going to coin, which is servant teamwork. It's about putting the needs of each other first on the team. And so with those two things, I thought, you know what? Somebody needs to write about this. Somebody needs to write a book to help team members commit more to the team. To be more service focused, more needs focused.
Gosh, I thought you were just watching, 1990, Chicago Bulls games and looking at Scottie Pippen go, man, that guy's a great team player. Look what he does for Jordan. Makes him look like a superstar. Right. It was all Scottie Pippen,
Right. Right. Exactly, right?
No, this is really good. I think this is very insightful. I mean, you and I have had a little opportunity to talk about your book, but I love how I didn't know the reason and where you came up with that, but servant teamwork. Well, so how have people received that? When you teach teams, are they like, oh, no, yeah, this now I've got to play more of a role? Or do people kind of buy into that and it makes sense? What's the reaction you get from people?
Yeah, the reaction so far has been really positive. I will tell you that most of the reaction I'm getting at this point, because the book is still fairly new, but most of the reaction I'm getting is from leaders, which is a reason, that's a purpose why, and the reason why I wrote the book too. I wrote it for teammates, but I also wrote it for leaders because I wanted to make leaders' jobs a lot easier. Yeah. And I feel like, this book will do that. And that's the feedback I'm getting from leaders. They're just saying, yeah, this is a wonderful book. I had somebody buy 27 copies the other day. Just at once. And I thought, wow, these guys are buying it for their organization, not just for their team, but their entire organization. And so to me, that, that says a lot about what the book is meaning to the leader. As far as the teammate, I have had a few teammates comment as well, who said that it's not only improving their life as a teammate, I've had a couple people say this, but it's also improving their life in general. So because being a member of a team is about relationships. And this book is focused on that important aspect of being an effective teammate, the relationship component. They're able to apply this to other areas of their life. I had one person who said she had been part of this volunteer organization where they would do this retreat. And she said every year it was just a mess. And after reading, in terms of the relationships, in terms of the communication, she said, after I read this book, she says, I went with a very different attitude. And she says it was a very different experience than I'd ever had with this particular team. Huh. And so that's probably the best example I could give.
Well, and I can think of applications at work and in family, and how your perspective of what the team is about plays such an important role in the outcome. I love it. And I should have given a disclaimer earlier on too, in my opportunity to connect with Michael and ask him to be on the show. We've engaged Michael. We just barely closed the deal to ask him to come to our annual company training, and we're buying a copy of every book for our employees as well. And we're asking him to come and talk about these six simple ways teammates can go from good to great. And so we've bought into it. We've loved the message, and so we're going to be honored in just a few weeks, and we're going to have a chance to have Mike in our office teaching this. And that's what he does. And he can do it, virtually or in person, but this is just fantastic info. Well, why don't you share one of these six simple ways? Which one's your favorite? I mean, is there one that really jumps out at you that you like to talk about?
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to say they're all six my favorite, because I poured my
heart. Just like your children. They're all favorites.
Yeah, that's right. I poured my heart, blood, and sweat into this book. But if I was to pick one, I definitely would probably go with the first one, which is around being selfless. So there's six B's in the book. Be selfless, be trustworthy, be humble, be positive, be respectful, be great. And within each of these B's, each of these virtues are these concepts. And under this first chapter, and the reason I wrote the first one, entitled it Be Selfless, is because it's foundational to the rest. The more selfless a teammate is, the more you're going to see a team improve. And in fact, I would say that if teams would just live one or two of these, you'll see dramatic improvement in terms of teamwork. That's what's really neat about the concepts in this book. But the Be Selfless one talks about three important concepts: giving service, providing service, to each other. So that's team members serving each other. I'll talk about that in just a minute.
Okay.
Living the Platinum Rule, which is about putting others first. The Platinum Rule is different than the Golden Rule. The Golden Rule is do unto others as you want to be done to. The Platinum Rule is do unto others as they want to be done to. Mm. It's a very different way to look at doing things for others, or thinking about others, putting their needs, others' needs first. And so I talk about that extensively in the book. And the third is putting the team first. Because a lot of times we think, you know, I have a question, one of the questions I ask is, what is the contribution that you bring to the team today? What do you bring to the team? And a lot of times people think about their contribution personally, you know, how's it affecting me? But they don't think about how it's affecting the team. It's a really interesting question, because they have to start thinking about what they're really bringing to the team. So that first one under service, let me give you a few quick examples and the reason this.
And if I could, let me interject something real quick. So gosh, this is just so powerful already. I'm taking notes. I'm going to send this show to all my kids and make them listen to it. But as a law firm, we're going to be talking about it. But the analogies can't be lost on sports. And I hate to say, because to me, the first thing I was thinking about, and I apologize, and I want to relate this to business, is that I was just thinking of a basketball team as well, is that the selflessness, you know, I'm going to pass the ball. And I'm going to pass the ball to a teammate that really likes to do jump shots. Why am I going to pass it to him if I force him into a layup? He doesn't want layups. That's maybe what I want him to do, but I really want to. He wants jump shots, so I'm going to pass him the ball with jump shots. And I mean, and the analogies go on and on. But in business, they're the same thing, aren't they? I mean, you were just going to give an example, so maybe sometimes my hosting of a show helps the show move along, Michael. Sometimes it doesn't.
No, I'm glad you chimed in there, because there's a quote that I love, and I have this in the book. It's by Bill Russell, and he was asked, you know, how do you know you've had a good game? And he said, the way I know I've had a good game is whether I've made my teammates better. Mm. And if he's made his teammates better, then that's the best game he could have played.
And for those that don't, I love it. For those that don't know Bill Russell, explain that to people.
Yeah, so Bill Russell was a Hall of Famer, a National Basketball Association player, an NBA player, professional basketball player, and a really good one, and a very selfless one. And so I love that example. I tell my boys, I ask my boys that question now after they play high school sports, and I say, you know, after the game is over, how did you help your team be better? That's the first thing I want to know. Not how many points you scored, but how did you help your team be better? And that's kind of a team first kind of question, right?
Yeah.
And that's what we should be asking ourselves as teammates, you know, in order to be effective teammates. So, yeah, I was going to talk about service. So
yeah, please.
So yesterday, last night, actually, I was talking to a dentist friend of mine, and he was sharing with me a story of an experience he had in his office, in his practice, where a dental assistant had begun to ask others on the team how she could serve them, how she could help them, how she could assist them. And it created a lot of positive vibes with the team. And he noticed after a while, because it became contagious, others on the team also began to ask how they could serve each other, you know? And so he said, it was just all this positive energy created from just this simple question: how can I serve you? What can I do to help you? And when we see that, there's a lot of things that happen. I call it the service effect. The service effect is simply the more we serve someone else, the more we begin to care about that person. And the more we care about that person, the more desire we have to serve them. And what happens, and so it becomes this real positive cycle of energy. And this is what he found in his dental practice. But what's really cool about this is the products of that are increased trust, because people are starting to really care about each other. They're starting to serve each other. They're starting to care about each other. They're getting to know each other. And when they get to know each other, they begin to trust each other more. And a lot of cool things happen because of trust increasing: better communication, more efficient communication, greater commitment. I mean, all these nice little byproducts occur because of this service effect.
I was just going to use the word byproduct. Yeah. Right when you said it, I was thinking byproduct, because sometimes we don't know what the ripple effect, for another word to use there, is. That by just walking around the office and saying, what can I do to help you? The impact that has on people. And I think you know, let's get real. Many of us spend more time at work with our work associates than with our loved ones. Isn't that crazy? It's just the way it is. We're just at work 8 to 10 hours a day, sometimes 12 hours a day, trying to make a living. And then we come home, we get 3 or 4 hours in front of the TV. You know, like, what kind of relationship is that? And so when you can come home and walk in the door, us guys, I'll challenge you, walk in the door and walk up to your wife and go, hey, what can I do for you tonight? Now, once she gets off the floor and, you know, hopefully you can give her some CPR and pick her up, you know, and then she tells you, I mean, what's the impact?
Yeah, so great example, right? And when we were talking earlier about families and teams and how I use a lot of this, this becomes kind of my laboratory. And years ago, because I had discovered this service effect years ago, I sat down with my family and we had what was called a family council. And I said, let's each of us write down something we can do nice for each other this week. Holy cow. I mean, the positive energy created from that and the love that was created from that, and it just all these nice, good, rippled kind of effect type of things that were happening in our family. It was super cool to see that because, again, when we serve, we love, and when we love, we want to serve more, and it just becomes
snowballs.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, snowballs. Yeah. Yeah, it's huge. Now, and on teams, it's a wonderful effect.
Yeah, so. You know, and you want to be at an office. And so where I was going with that, I guess I got distracted with the family example. But if when we spend so much time at work, why not just try to make it a little more enjoyable? You know, make it more enjoyable for your coworker. And just think what it'll do for you at the office when you feel like people care what you think and how you feel. Because we spend a lot of time together. So yeah, now you said absolutely. There was three things under that selfless service. So what, mm-hmm. go, remind us those three and tell us what we've covered. Cause I want to take notes here.
So we've talked about service. That's the first one under selflessness.
Under selflessness. So more, service under
more
selflessness.
We're serving each other. Okay. It's selfless, right?
Okay.
The second is living the platinum rule.
Okay.
And I'll give you a quick example on that. So many people have read the book. I think it's The Five Languages of Love or
Seven
Languages.
Oh, I love that book. Fantastic.
You love that book?
Yes. Yeah, so yeah, good. So
great.
Good.
Great book. Great book. My wife had me read it.
Yeah. And wives will make good. Their husband read it. It's good.
Right. So you remember, they do. And you'll remember in there, we have these languages of love in this marriage relationship. But I think we have languages of love in many different relationships, all kinds of relationships, you know, with our children, for example. And so my language of love is positive affirmations. I love to be told I'm doing a great job. That's hands down my language of love. My wife's is gifts. She loves gifts. And so if I'm constantly giving her praise, that's not going to be near as effective as if I give her a gift. Mm-hmm. And so when teammates are thinking about others first, so, you know, I may be somebody, for example, that doesn't like to communicate via text. So don't send me a text, pick up the phone and call me. And if you know that about me as a teammate, that's going to be a lot more effective in our relationship than just barrage, you know, sending me a barrage of text messages.
Yeah,
that's not going to make me happy. And our relationship will be strained to a degree because of that.
Yeah.
So when we're thinking about others first, and that's a platinum rule, when we're thinking about others first, you know, we get much further ahead in our relationships as teammates.
Yeah. And staying with the business analogy, isn't it funny? Like, just I like using that text versus phone call procedure. Isn't it common that a lot of us will force what we think their language should be upon them, whether it's with our spouse or, but in work setting, if they say, no, just pick up the darn phone and call me, but we don't do it. We want to force texting on them. We're going to make them like text. We're going to make them do it.
Right.
Where would it be easier just to pick up the phone and make it special?
Yeah, right. Exactly. We're forcing what we feel like we would want on them. And that's the golden rule. And the golden rule has applicability. Don't get me wrong. Don't hit Susie because you don't like to be hit, so it's not good to hit Susie, right?
Yeah.
So that's the golden rule. We teach that to our children all the time, but this platinum rule takes it to a whole nother level. And that's the second concept of being selfless. The third is to put the team first, and we did talk a little bit about that, but Jerry Rice gave this example. So we'll go to the sports analogies, and I use our sports stories as well. I have several of these in the book because you're right, Mark. They fit.
Oh, it's classic.
Yeah, they're classic. And Jerry Rice was asked if he felt at the time the Denver Broncos were winning a lot of games. That's a National Football League team, an NFL team. And he was asked whether the quarterback, Tim Tebow, or the defense were the reasons why they were winning as much. And in essence, he basically said that was a stupid question. That's what he told the interviewer. He said, it's not just one or two people. It's not just the defense that's helping them win. He says it's the ticket takers. It's the people taking out the trash. It's the people the cleaning the locker rooms. It's the managers. It's the whole team. It's the entire organization that makes it work, not just one or two people. So, you know, when you're putting the team first, you're in a very different mentality. A lot of times we get caught up in our own career aspirations and our own, you know, desire to succeed. And those things are important. I'm not saying they're not important, right, but they should take a second seat to what's best for the team.
Yeah,
and that's the third concept that I talk about.
Ah, so good. And when you're, and it's true. I think a lot of us do want to pat ourselves on the back. We want to take credit for how well the office is performing, or the sales, or the production that month, or how well the team at the office is doing. There's always that person that wants to take credit for it. And I think for good reason people do that, because they might have a self-esteem issue and they want to feel important. And so there's a lot of times, if we peel away the onion, there's a reason why people are doing that. But nevertheless, the higher rule, the I think, and I've got a quote in front of you. That's good, but let's get to great, right? Good
right.
to great.
Right.
And you like that? I brought around your cover right there, man. Take it to the
Very
next
creative.
Level. And so and tell us, in fact, let's maybe talk about that for just a moment. What do you mean by good to great? Like what I mean, I kind of started to throw out a little something there and I probably butchered it. But what is an example of good to great in this genre of teamwork?
Yeah. So there are a lot of teams that are effective. But there's not a lot of teams that are effective and great. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of teams are average, because on most teams, for example, you have some team members who are really strong. This is the makeup of the teams that I consult anyways. And I've consulted both, as you mentioned earlier, senior level teams, middle level manager level leadership teams. But I've also consulted with small business as well. So I've seen this across multiple teams. And the makeup is usually you have a few really strong members, a few really strong committed members to the team, and you have some average members and you have some poor performers. That's just the average makeup. And for some reason, we're really good at accepting poor performance in business. We're not as good at that in the sports world. You'll go back to the sports analogies, right? We don't accept it. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're a ball player, for example, and you're hitting below 240, you know, one or three things are going to happen. I'm going to take you out and I'm going to try to develop you and get your batting average better, right? Mm-hmm. Which is how many hits out of how many at-bats. That's what a batting average is. And I'm going to work on you getting better. And there's one of three things that are going to happen. Either you're going to get better and I'm going to keep you on the team, or you're going to have a bad attitude and I'm going to move you off the team. You're going to have a bad attitude about it, or you're just not going to have the talent and you just can't do it, and I'm going to still take you off the team.
Yeah.
But in business, we do a really poor job of hiring, and we do a poor job of firing, and we do a poor job of everything in between, which is performance management. And so really, the book is about helping teammates commit to these six virtues to become better, to become greater, to develop them, and to make the leader's job a lot easier as they become great. And that's what I mean by going from good to great. You have a lot of average performers, but they need to move that up. They need to become great, not just good. We can't settle for average anymore. That's not good for your team. We need to settle for great. And that's, you know, again, that's what the book is focused on, is helping them get to that.
Man, gosh, I like, seriously, if any of you listeners are like me, I'm like, made a note already, buy six copies for this group and this group, because I'm on several teams. Many of us serve on different teams. And this is just phenomenal. Gosh, well, I know we only had you for a short time today. I know how busy you are. And Mike, I want to say thank you. This is just fantastic. And as I've already stated, we're that committed to this concept that we've retained Mike to come to our annual conference. And it's been just wonderful rekindling this relationship with you. Do you want to send anyone anywhere in particular? I mentioned your website. Would you might maybe mention your book, or what could we do to help you get in touch with more people on this?
Yeah, appreciate that. So MichaelGRogers.com. Is my personal website around the book and around my speaking and all that other good stuff. So if you go to Michael G. Rogers, highlight the G because you go to michaelrogers.com, you won't get me. So it's michaelgrogers.com/books. If you could just go to michaelgrogers.com, you can get to the books, you know, from the menu as well. But michaelgrogers.com/books, there you can get more information on the book. I've got a link to Amazon to get the book. The book is available on Amazon. I also have some information on the workbook, which is a self-study guide for teams to go through so they can create actionable plans around the information in the book. And you can get bulk packages as well. So if you buy 5 books, 5 workbooks, you can get a really good price for that.
Love it. Well, fantastic. Well, thank you so much. And we wish you the best. And thank you for this motivational conversation for me. Absolutely. And thank you for all you do. I hope you're...
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you. Well, we'll have you back.
Thank you. Thank you for all you do. You're a phenomenal friend and a great mentor as well. So.
Well, I appreciate it. Is there anything I can do for you? No, I'm just joking. I'm not going to. Okay. Well, anyway, thank you, Mike. I love the book. We'll have Mike back and appreciate him being with us. Now, folks, remember, if you find this helpful, if you find it enjoyable, please share it with your friends, your contacts, your family, and make sure that you get out there and spread the good word about small business and the American dream and teamwork. Just an example here. You can please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a quick screenshot of your review, and we'll send you a complimentary copy of one of our books of your choice. We've got, 3 or 4 copies of different books on topics that might be helpful to you as you build your American dream. But please give us a 5-star review. We'd appreciate it. And share a link of the show with your team. A few minutes of this with your team could be a great staff meeting reviewing this show, and bring it up with your family as well. So thanks, everybody. And we'll see you next week for another episode of Refresh Your Wealth.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.